Welcome to a podcast on Chapter 15. This chapter is entitled From Starting to Scaling and Beyond: How Do Entrepreneurs and SMEs Innovate and Grow? You are joined by Simon Raby and Jeff Gregson. This chapter itself has many learning outcomes, and you'll find these detailed within the chapter body within the main text. But just to explore these very briefly, we're going to explore how small and medium-sized enterprises are defined and why that makes a difference, why that is important. We're also going to identify the pros and cons associated with working for a smaller enterprise, particularly the working environment that you may experience when working for smaller organisations. We're going to talk a little bit about growth and how small firms start up and scale up and move beyond to achieve significant levels of growth within the economy. And we'll explore the concepts of entrepreneurship and what fundamentally makes an entrepreneur. How are they defined? How do they develop? We'll then describe how entrepreneur applies across different business environments, and we'll recall some of the key processes involved in forming a new venture. Finally, we'll evaluate some of the critical debates surrounding entrepreneurship and SMEs. And just finishing off on the podcast, we'll look towards the future. In particular, what does this mean from a policymaker's standpoint? And how do we respond as organisations and entrepreneurs to some of the key megatrends that exist within the world? In the first section of the chapter, we're talking particularly around understanding SMEs. In particular, we want to talk about how SMEs are defined. And what you find very quickly when looking through the different definitions at a global level between countries is there's no one universal definition of an SME. You'll find within Table 15.1 contrasting SME definitions across the EU, the US, Canada, and China, and you'll find that they vary to some great extent. For example, you get to China and a small business has between 100 and 600 employees. That size of business within a UK context would actually be considered a large business as well. So that difference means different things, and it often refers to the context that those businesses are situated within their unique cultural context and identity. Why is understanding how SMEs defined important? Well, it's important for a number of reasons, but not least the fact that policymakers need to identify who and how SMEs perform within the economy. So they have to be labelled, and we have to label them to achieve that. So those definitions help us to segment particular organisations within these countries and therefore allow us to direct support to those organisations. The definition of SMEs is one thing, and finding out what we really mean by a small business. But why are small businesses important? Well, small business is big business, and there are many reasons why that is the case. Numerically, they're hugely important. Typically, when you look across global contexts and global economies, they make up over 90% of all organisations in the economy. They also employ the majority of labour. They will employ between 60 to 90% of all employees within the private sector workforce. So there is a very good chance that you, listening to this podcast at the moment, will become experienced to the workplace of a small and medium company. And we'll talk later in this podcast a little bit about the work environment that you might get to experience when you engage within working for a small company. David Birch, in particular, is someone that's worthwhile calling up at this point. He published a seminal research paper, The Job Generation Process, back in 1979. One of the things this drew attention to was not only how significant small businesses were from the number of employees they employed, but actually just how many jobs they created. These organisations, these high-growth, rapidly growing organisations, were ones that he identified through this piece of research and have since become labelled as gazelles. Gazelles is a term that you'll get to read more about in the chapter and we'll touch on later as we go through into the entrepreneurship space. But this does start to get into debates around policy making and debates about how you allocate funds and resources to support organisations. You'll find particularly some statistics in figure 15.1 when we're talking about the annual job creation and destruction rates in the US context, and you'll see how they vary up and down and what that means. And it talks a lot more about that within the chapter, but it's worthwhile checking out. One of the next things about small and medium companies and why they're important is the role they play in innovation. Innovation is essential because it enables enterprises to respond to and compete in ever-changing marketplaces. And small businesses are seen as disruptors within the economy. Where large firms often can settle with the status quo, small businesses are finding ways to challenge and champion different causes within the economy. And so they're typically more innovative than their older organisational counterparts. One way that innovation is typically defined is based upon patents. And you'll find a figure within the chapter which talks about the number of patents that are actually released at a country level. When you look at that, you'll see that the US, based upon patents, is by far the most innovative country. But that isn't necessarily reflective of what innovation actually is. Innovation is important in this context because innovation and entrepreneurship have a very strong link. And soon Jeff will talk more about entrepreneurship and innovation at the individual entrepreneur level. Why is this important? Well, innovation entrepreneurship, as Drucker says back in the 1985, he said it's the specific instrument of entrepreneurship, the act that endows resources with a new capacity to create wealth. Here, new can mean to the world, it can mean to an industry, it can mean to an enterprise, or even a group within an enterprise. And this is the reality of innovation. Innovation, much like how we define SMEs, is a contested landscape. There isn't one easy, simple definition of innovation. But there exists a number of typologies that you can actually access to analyse different types of innovation. So you'll see within the chapter we talk about novelty, that is, the degree of newness of something. Or we talk about a type of innovation, whether it's a product, a service, maybe it's entering a new market. There are also other ways of defining innovation along technological and administrative sides, as well as product processes and the speed at which innovations occur, whether that's radical or incremental. It's worthwhile checking out the mini case in the chapter, which talks about the EU Community Innovation Survey, and just explore what that data does and actually what you can draw from that. Just to finish off on SMEs, though, at this point in the chapter, before we move on to entrepreneurship, we want to talk a little bit about the SME work environment. There has been a lot of contest and debate as well around the kind of work environment that smaller firms provide to employees and what employees ultimately experience. One of the phrases that's been used and associated with small businesses for some time is this small as beautiful or small as brutal image. And what we mean by that is a very different contrast between some researchers that have found workers' contributions to be more readily recognised within small firms due to smaller structures, it's the proximity to leadership, etc. So you can communicate better typically within smaller firms, and you have a higher degree of autonomy. And so you can actually contribute not only to your role, but to decision making within the wider organisation. These views and perspectives have been contrasted by others who have actually found evidence of poor working conditions, lower wages, and longer working hours within small firms, not least also higher levels of health and safety concerns and incidents. This also is affected by the different sectors that these firms would exist within. And so there's a range of research that's worthwhile checking out if you're interested in that space, that also looks at firms that are existing on the margins of the economy. So these aren't always high growth, progressive organisations. There are some firms that are out there just to purely survive, and many small businesses achieve that survival. Moving on though, not to be fooled that workers, or as you as a worker entering a small or medium company, that you don't have any power. You do have power, And there's researchers that have spoken about actually how that power works. And this is in something called the work effort wage bargain. And you can learn more about that if you were to read research within the employment relations perspective. But in particular, there's a figure which will talk about employer control strategies in small firms within the chapter. And that's by Goss from 1991. And essentially it's saying that there are some environments within small firms where workers feel more controlled, but there are also some environments within firms where workers can have a degree of autonomy. And that this isn't just about a leadership perspective or decision that's being made. This is actually also how employees demonstrate their power within the workplace. Finishing off on small firms then, what about growth? Well, growth is something that again has been contested over the years as to how firms achieve growth successfully. There are a range of different models that have been invented and launched into the business and management literature, and typically these are related to the life cycle model. The life cycle model is akin to a biological life cycle. As a firm grows, a firm grows very much like a plant. Now, we know that that's not the case these days. We know that that is a very linear, deterministic perspective of growth, and that you can't just expect growth to come after startup and to end in maturity and ultimately decline. More recently, there's been a range of research on transitions, and that's worthwhile checking out. It's worthwhile looking at research that actually critiques how businesses move from one stage to the other. And so we start to talk about states that organisations can enter into and exit out of. And those states are impacted by a range of factors. It could be impacted by a crisis that occurs in the organisation. It could be something that a leader or a manager stands up for. Or maybe it's a leadership or management change that happens in the organisation. It could even be complexity. So as organisations grow, they become more complex. And that can even have an effect on the way that growth occurs. One of the things that's worthwhile looking at is there's a mini case on growth and how growth can often be perceived, particularly at a policy level, as just an increase in the number of employees or an increase in revenues and sales. The reality, when you look at an owner-manager level, these business leaders who are actually leading these business, is that there are a range of different reasons why they get into business and how they champion growth. And so growth to them can often mean just ultimately being successful with a product or service they've created in taking that to market. So we suggest that you have a look at that mini case and just explore that from your own perspective, along with the different capabilities that growth-oriented organisations can achieve and experience. And there's a range of tools that you can look at through various websites and podcasts that we've provided. What I'll do now is I'm going to pass over to Jeff Gregson. And Jeff will take you through the entrepreneurship chapter and we'll talk more about the individual level of the entrepreneur and the entrepreneurial society.
Thanks, Simon. So the second half of the chapter talks about the concept of entrepreneurship. And there's a number of definitions of entrepreneurship. We define entrepreneurship through a value-based approach where entrepreneurship is opportunity-centered. It rewards talent, performance, and ambition over social class or educational credentials. This provides entrepreneurship with a strong and broad attention to different types of geographical regions or countries where there's limited opportunities to go through the socioeconomic ladder. If you're going through a very formalized approach, entrepreneurship allows you to cross over a lot of those traditional barriers. When we think about entrepreneurship, we also associate it with new venture creation, but that's not the case. There's many different types of entrepreneurship that I will talk about in a minute. While entrepreneurship is associated with new venture creation, the term entrepreneur can refer to a broad range of individuals within the business environment who identify new opportunities and act upon them. There's no generally accepted or universal definition for entrepreneur. As we have found, as Simon mentioned, in attempting to define small and medium enterprise, We'll discuss in the chapter how the different definitions of entrepreneurship and entrepreneur have evolved to include concepts of risk-taking, opportunity identification, and resources required to pursue the opportunity. We also talk about this strong relationship, as Simon mentioned before, between innovation and entrepreneurship, which was identified in the work of Peter Drucker and Joseph Schumpeter, the economist best known for highlighting innovation as the basis for economic growth. Schumpeter suggests five types of innovations that we describe in the chapter: a new good or service, a process innovation, a new market, a new source of raw material, or a new organizational form. One of the questions that we pose in the chapter is, are small business owners also entrepreneurs? And this continues to attract debate. The question of whether a small business owner is also an entrepreneur is at the center of the debate around the notion of innovation. Schumpeter defines the entrepreneur as an innovator who introduces novel combinations to the market. And that might appear less relevant to an individual who imitates another business or buys a franchise operation or chooses self-employment in the same line of business previously undertaken as an employee. We'll also discuss the related concepts of self-employment, lifestyle enterprises, and the gig economy, which refers to temporary flexible work provided by the self-employed to other organizations. We then talk about domains of entrepreneurship, and as mentioned before, although entrepreneurship is often associated with new venture creation, it can cross over a number of business domains, which include corporate entrepreneurship, often referred to as intrapreneurship, family enterprising, social entrepreneurship, and more recently, sustainable entrepreneurship. We talk then about entrepreneurship and new ventures, and in this section, we discuss what it takes to start a new enterprise, and we provide a holistic picture of the process of new venture formation, where the entrepreneur is the central figure in forming a new business. Here, we use the term entrepreneur to acknowledge the opportunistic and risk-taking behavior and actions required to start one's own business. Most new businesses engage in six business formation activities that we describe in the chapter: opportunity identification, securing resources, management and team building, company formation, refining services or products for the market, and finally, financial feasibility. We emphasize that this is an iterative process, and different types of entrepreneurial ventures might go about these different formation activities differently than just described. In summarizing new venture formation in this section, we talk about this as being a learning process, particularly for first-time or nascent entrepreneurs. Each of the six activities I mentioned generates new information and insights that inform the viability of the opportunity. Finally, on the entrepreneurship side, we talk about financing the new venture, and the level of startup capital required to start a new venture is often determined by the nature of the market and the industry, which includes capital intensity of the business sector and the size and growth of the market. We discuss business models, which have been very much in the forefront of much of the recent literature, and we describe the business model canvas, which helps explain the logic and describes the rationale of how a new enterprise will create, deliver, and capture value. We also discuss new venture growth, and we refer back to the first part of the chapter, which identifies the factors that influence SME growth. How the new venture pursues growth will be influenced by the entrepreneurial behavior and actions, and also influenced by the business environment. One of the other questions we talk about is related to the policies that are being influenced by policymakers and by economic conditions. And one of the questions we pose will, how will policymakers respond to the changing needs of entrepreneurs and SMEs? Most OECD countries involve policies which support different types of entrepreneurial activity and which influence the macro conditions which relate to taxation regulations, immigration, and competition. With that, I'll pass you back to Simon, and we will talk about the trends, mega trends, that are affecting SMEs and entrepreneurship.
We labeled this chapter From Startup to Scale Up and Beyond for a reason. And the reason was, and one of the points that Jeff touched base on, was the fact that quite often entrepreneurship is seen and is akin to just startup enterprises. And what Jeff mentioned is that that's not the case, that we can find examples of entrepreneurial activity throughout an economy, through organizations both small and large. What we try to achieve in table 15.11 is we speak about the new venture startup to scale up process and just provide a little bit of an insight to the difference between those concepts, startup and scale up, and that ultimately this chapter has been about how do you achieve growth across entrepreneurship and small and medium companies. We conclude also with looking forward to mega trends. And Jeff mentioned that at the tail end of his talk just now. The reason why megatrends are important is that these are the fundamental forces driving change across economies globally. These are areas and opportunities that entrepreneurs can look at, can weigh up, and potentially launch new products, new services into these particular markets. It's worthwhile thinking about how you might launch a venture that could meet some of these potential issues. Not necessarily solving this on a global level, but what could you achieve in your local context, in your local town or city? Ultimately, we hope you enjoy the chapter and we hope you finish off with reading around diving deep into entrepreneurship, how an entrepreneur is building a business in aquaponics, which provides a really good case study of a university undergrad who then left university but explored this particular area while at his particular institution and has since become very successful in solving some of the big problems around sustainable food production. It's worthwhile checking that out and answering the questions at the end of that case.